Welcome to IanEllis.podbean.com. I'm your host, Ian Ellis. Get excited. Smoke something, drink something, turn up and relax. This is just a chill podcast, man. We're going to talk about comedy. We're going to get deep into comedy. We're going to review Louis C.K.'s new special. And I'm not going to give you the review that everybody else is going to give you, where they either hated it because they're offended by all the naughty things he said, or they love it because, oh my god, he's the greatest comic ever. I'm going to tell you what a comic thinks of his special. And it's going to go a lot deeper. Now, on the whole, if you're not a comedy nerd, if you're not a comedian, my opinion for you is it's good. It's great. It's the best special that's come out this year. He blew Bill Burr's Paper Tiger and Dave Chappelle's Equanimity and the Bumblebee out of the water. He made Dave Chappelle look like a pussy. So I recommend it. If you're a fan of comedy, if you're a fan of dark comedy, it's great. He made a wonderful comeback. Now, as a comic, a lot of it was really fucking hacky. And there's a lot of room for improvement. So let me tell you why he sucks. And it's important for me to say this shit because comics need to be reviewing comedy, and they need to do it openly and honestly, because otherwise, if the people that do it don't review it, then the people that don't do it are going to be the ones that review it, and they don't know what they're talking about. It's like a person that doesn't play an instrument reviewing music. They're just going off, did I like it, did I not like it? They don't know the ins and outs, the tricks, all the rigmarole that goes into being good at stand-up. I know it all. I know all your tricks. So I'm going to get in-depth about the stuff that I did and didn't like about this special. And I'm going to be meandering in a lot of different directions at once. I got like three or four different things that they all tie in together. And hopefully I can tie this all, put a ribbon around all of this, and bring it all together in the end. But it's going to seem like I'm just ADD and drifting off in different directions. Try to stay with me. Keep a lot of different thoughts in your head at the same time. This is complicated. I'm not going to spoon feed you this shit. So Louis, here's some of the hacky shit. Here was my problem with Louis back when he was the man, because I didn't really like him when he was the most popular comic. I found him to be very formulaic. I study the formulas of comedians. I study funny. I look at everything they do, all the tricks, and you'd be surprised, like act outs, callbacks, breaking physical norms, changing your tone and intonation. The thing Patrice used to do is he would ask an audience member a question, and that was the premise of the bit, and then whatever they said, he would debate them to get to the punchline he wanted to get to. And that was a way of keeping his jokes fresh so that they didn't, it wasn't this stale, morose, just saying the same stupid shit all the time. There was a wild card in the middle of his thing, and he never knew where it was going to go. And you can't know. You can never predict what these people are going to say. They're going to throw you, they're going to throw you for a loop every time, but he was enough of a master that he could transition from whatever they said to wherever he wanted to get to, or at least get to funny on the back end of it. Louis came back. This is a new special. Louis used to be formulaic, and his formula was, hey, you ever notice that thing that assholes do? Yeah, I do that thing because I'm an asshole. And then he would double down and show himself to be twice as douchey and twice as much of an asshole as whatever he had brought up. And he did this a lot. You can go back and watch his old specials. You'll figure it all out. My little monkey butt just woke up. Back when Dane Cook was accused of stealing from Louis C.K., I honestly wasn't surprised. For most people, they probably seem like dramatically different comedians, but they're actually very similar. Dane Cook's formula is, hey, you remember that thing? Wasn't it all like this? And then he would transported to the future and be like, what if we had one of those today? Wacky, wacky, wacky. And he would act it all out. It's similar to the asshole formula. It's just where Louis would indulge in shittiness. Dane Cook was more into nostalgia, but it was the same sort of mathematical formula and structure to all of their bits. Now, when Louis dropped his special 2017, he was starting to break away from that and be a little bit more independent. But that special was still terrible. And that, it was very phoned in. And Louis's a guy. Here's one of the great things about Louis. He started doing a special a year. So he was very prolific. Now, when you do that much material, eventually you burn through all of your life stories, all of your emotions that you need to process, all of your observations. You get through all of that, and then you have to start doing something new. You burn through everything that everybody else has ever done, and now you got to make some new territory. And he was heading there as a comic, and unfortunately, he got too successful, and he got pretentious. 2017 was shitty, and this new special, he basically made a laundry list of, like, what's all the naughtiest things you could talk about, but the way he did it, there's a lot of hacky shit in there. We're going to go through all of it. I watched his special, and whenever, like, a big special like him or Burr or Chappelle comes out, I'm like, are they going to blow me out of the water? Is this it? Am I finished? And a lot of times they end up talking about the same shit that I talk about. And so I watched Louis's thing, and I went and watched my impression of Louis. Now, when Louis was in trouble, Judd Apatow and Pete Holmes went on fucking Jim and Sam, and they were telling Louis off. Well, you're not being funny enough. You're not doing funny the right way. Only we know how to do funny. And I was really pissed off about that, and I was like, I wish Louis would come out and do this, that, and the other. And then I was getting ready to go out and do my open mic that night. And I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, if I shave a bald spot into the middle of my head and put a black t-shirt on, I could look like Louis. And how about I just go up there and say all the shit that I wish Louis would say? Instead of wishing he would do it, how about I get out there and do it myself? And this is something I've been saying to the Cult of Black Phillip fans. It's like, are you just going to romanticize how righteous Patrice was? Or are you going to go out there and do some fucking righteousness of your own? Step up. Fight the goddamn war. You like the war, right? Don't just romanticize the soldiers. How about you go get some blood on your teeth? And one more thing is, if Louis really wanted to be edgy, he should have kept the Parkland shit in there. Half the shit he said on there was on his leaked tape. And he fucking took that out because bitch-ass Judd Apatow got mad at him. Fuck Judd Apatow. Go up there and tell those jokes, boo. So Louis in the special. He did this in 2017, and he did it in this one where he starts talking about God stuff. Now, he eventually gets to a funny punchline about God having a press conference, about how you're supposed to fuck the animals and not eat them. That part was really funny, but he should have gone straight to that part. There shouldn't have been all this dicking around about, like, what happens when you die, and Occam's razor, like, you know, is it the easiest answer, is it more comfort? That shit has been dead since the 90s. That was Bill Hicks, George Carlin. It was kind of edgy when they were doing it, because the world was still very Christian back then. But now they're done. And Louis even says, like, the churches are like old skating rinks. Like, it looks like something used to happen there, but they're defeated. So you have this old defeated enemy. He's just going to pour salt on the wounds. He's just going to openly muse about something that we've all gotten past. We've all done the reading. We've all heard Richard Dawkins. We're way past that. So for him to bring that up is some hacky, boring, awful shit. Then he starts talking about his family and the Holocaust. It's a very compelling story. It's material I was happy to hear. But he starts it off with, like, 44 members of my family died in the Holocaust. They were guards. That's a shitty street joke we've heard since the 80s, at least. I'm pretty sure Carlin came up with that line. It was dog shit. He should have cut that. And he should have cut it before he got on stage. Not after he filmed it. Shouldn't have been there in the first place. If you're the comedy rap god, if you're the top person, you shouldn't. It's like Jay-Z fucking throwing out Biggie lines. It's like, you're supposed to be Biggie at this point. Biggie's been dead. Biggie was 20-something when he died. You're 40. You're supposed to be innovating and dropping new language, not spitting old shit. And this isn't even as good as, like, at least Jay-Z, if he's saying that, he's kind of referencing something. As a comic, you can't reference street jokes. You gotta come original. 311, man, you gotta come original. His next thing he did that I really fucking hated is he makes a joke about crippled people. It's great, that's funny. But then the audience kind of jerks when he tags the joke off with a bit about the Boston bombing. Now, it's fucking hacky as shit to bring up the Boston bombing. That's fucking, it feels like decades ago. It's old. There's been a million tragedies since then. And fucking Family Guy has covered it. If Family Guy has covered it, it shouldn't be in your goddamn act. It's played out. It's done. But so he tags her. One thing I'll say that I liked is that he was tagging all of his jokes with like one more dark, edgy punchline at the end of it just to double down on the darkness. I wish more comics would do that because you know, everybody wants to tie everything into a point. But for him to be like, blah, 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 and then double down on the, I hope you're uncomfortable, that's a good, important trait to have. So he goes to do his double down. Which is the same. He made a 9/11 joke. He also made a goddamn 9/11 joke, which I don't give a fuck about 9/11. I give a fuck about hackiness. So he makes this joke about the Boston bombing, and people are they're groaning a little bit or whatever. And he goes, "No, we're not doing this. Okay, we're not. You were laughing at crippled guys 2 seconds ago, and comics have been doing this shit." Forever, where they're like, no, we could laugh at the Asian people, but we can't laugh at the black people. Or we could laugh at the dumb girl, but we can't laugh at the fat girl. You guys should be able to take all the jokes. The jokes, the joke, joke, joke. That's not real comedy. That's not real edge. If they should be able to take it, then you're not taking a risk. Huh? How about that? You want to be intellectually risque. You want to be taboo, you want to take an emotional, you want to take any kind of risk at all. You can't be mad at people that don't like you. That's what the risk is. That's the goddamn risk. Don't be mad at the risk. And it's patronizing, and every fucking comic is doing this. I did it on my album, like on the mixtape volume 5. Before that, I had done an album recording. At the end of that, I did my kind of my shot at that. I've had to grow through all of this shit just like everybody else. But these guys are 20 years ahead of me in comedy. I've been doing comedy for 10 years. These dudes have been famous my entire life. So they should not be doing it. And if they are doing it, they should be doing it in a better way that breaks new ground. Chappelle did it in a good way when he's like, boo-hoo-hoo, who's that? That's you. That's the audience. You're a bunch of bitch-made motherfuckers. That was the gangster way to do it. Let them be uncomfortable. Tell them they are wrong. But to sit there and go, you can't be uncomfortable. I get a pass. I get to say whatever I want, and I never get to be in trouble. And everybody has to be comfortable with everything I do. They shouldn't be comfortable. Patrice O'Neill would say all the time, like, if the whole room agrees with me, then I've fucked up. He's like, there should be discomfort. Half the room should hate me. That's what new ground looks like. That's what it means to go in a new direction. It's uncomfortable. It's buckly. You're going someplace people haven't been before, and they're uncomfortable with that because humans are creatures of habit, and they don't want to hear new fucking things. So I was really disappointed that he even made that speech. I was fucking sickened when Jim Norton did it. Side note, Jim Norton, I just watched This Is America, the fucking Borat, Sacha Baron Cohen. I just watched his show, This Is America. Back when I was calling into Jim and Sam in the early days of With Apologies, they were promoting the living fuck out of this show as the funniest show that's ever existed. It's terrible. It's fucking garbage. There's a couple skits that are funny, but on the whole, they completely missed the mark. And the mark, what you should be aiming for with a show like that, they got it right in a sketch where they go to a redneck town and they say they want to open a mosque, and then they film the people being you know, racist toward Muslims. That's the bit, is revealing the real racism that exists, revealing the real hatred and discomfort that's there. But these other things, it's like he gets into these costumes and then he just tries to make people uncomfortable or make them say naughty things. And it's like, if you're just tricking someone into saying something naughty, but it's obviously a trick, then you've done nothing here. The point is to get them to do stuff of their own free will and volition, stuff that is revealing, to lure them into being comfortable enough to say the stuff that they say behind closed doors, and then to get that on camera. So the show is trash. And Kurt Metzger worked on that. Shame on you, Kurt Metzger. Do better. Sacha Baron Cohen, you're done. I don't care about another thing you do ever. That sucked. Your last couple movies sucked. Eat a dick. You suck, Sacha Baron Cohen. And fuck you, Jim and Sam, for promoting that shit. It ain't funny. Stand up for funny. Standing up for funny means saying shit isn't funny. Don't sell me everything. You fighting the war, you selling the war. I don't know if I said this in the beginning, but part of the reason I need to explain comedy, or I feel like it's a good idea for me to review these albums, is that I know funny. And if I don't do it, then it's going to be left to the critics and the people that don't understand funny. So when these comics say everything is great and you look at it and it's shit, when everybody says Kevin Hart is great and Kevin Hart doesn't make you laugh, then you're looking at the people that co-signed him and you're going like, are you guys not funny? Did you find that funny? Because that was horrendous. And if you recommended that to me and that was your highest recommendation, then I can't trust your recommendation anymore. You've fucked it off. You've ruined it. All right. Back to Louis. Louis, I feel like he said stuff on here that he wouldn't have said if he was still mainstream, because he is a pretentious art house kind of guy. I was at his recording when he recorded at the Comedy Store. I went to his and Ari Shaffir's and Tony Hinchcliffe's. I just happened to be there for all of them. That's when I was in LA. And Louis, like, I didn't even know what was going on, but there's an attic above the stage that he performed on, and so everybody was like, hey man, he's recording right now. I went up to the attic and I was looking down watching him perform as it was being recorded. Now, most comics at the Comedy Store, these veteran comics, Doug Stanhope, Bill Burr, Dave Attell, these guys will come hang out with the open micers. They see some sort of value in, like, reaching out to the younger journeymen and talking to them and helping them along their way. Louis is such a diva that he, like, wanted to be snuck in and snuck out, and he's notorious for wanting nothing to do with open micers. He fucking hates you guys. He's done. He likes being famous Louis. And I hope this isn't a springboard into just getting his career back on track. I hope this is a springboard into him growing as an artist and really not giving a fuck. I felt like my Louis impression, fucking Judd Apatow and Pete Holmes. I really hope I'm not repeating myself. I have to have just told this story because I was just talking about Jim and Sam. Anyway, my Louis impression, I said what I wanted Louis to say, and I feel like it was more gangster than what he did with his actual special. I still want him to come out and do more. But I like that he doubled down on the darkness. I like the direction he's heading in. I just hope that he'll get rid of this hacky shit and embrace being a villain, or embrace being hated, or embrace being unique. Embrace your situation. The situation ain't gonna change. It's gonna suck so much if he just worms his way back into regular showbiz. I'm gonna be mad. I'm gonna go after him. Louis, you better come correct, or I'm gonna come for your fucking neck. You know who else I hate right now is Pete Davidson. Pete Davidson is an example of comedy trying to shove somebody down your throat. Pete Davidson, he has a movie on Hulu right now. He has a special on Netflix right now. I think he's still on SNL right now. And then I just saw him on The Roast of Rob Lowe. And I don't know if that was new or if that just premiered. I just happened to see the clip the other day. It could have happened. They could have recorded it 3 days ago and I saw it 2 days ago. Or this could be from 2 years ago and I have no idea, because I don't pay attention to the roasts because they're fucking lame. He's an example of they're trying everything they fucking can to market him, almost like he's a boy band. They're pimping him out as hard as they fucking can, and he's not built for it. He's ruining it at every step. He's cutting himself. He's having suicidal meltdowns on Twitter. He was drunk on the roast and obnoxious, and it's like he's self-sabotaging at every level, and he ain't gonna make it. If he keeps going the way he's going, he's either going to OD, he's going to kill himself, or he's going to be one of these guys that goes into rehab, and it's going to be pretty lame for the rest of his fucking career. But he ain't a legend in the making. He's like a boy band. They're just trying to get as much money out of him as they can before he's not cute anymore. And he ain't going to be cute for long, not with that awful spider body. You see the bones in his body? Ugh. My son is up. I want to talk about the comic book industry and how this relates to the comedy industry. Because comedy, they're saying, is like, oh, it's a golden age right now. Oh my God, so much stuff is out right now. What is the golden age? Just that everybody has a podcast? None of them are funny. It would be a golden age if we had all these like new Richard Pryors and new Dave Chappelle's breaking new ground, but we have Dave Chappelle. And now I guess Louis. And kinda Bill Burr? Bill's fucking a pussy. Bill Burr stinks. He's very funny in his special, but his activities... You know, he kicked Anthony out of the Patrice benefit, and Patrice wouldn't exist without Anthony Cumia. But, you know, Cumia ran afoul of Bill's black wife, so he SJW kicked him out. Is that being on the side of funny, Bill? Is that what it looks like when you're the real thing? The comic book industry. It's going to be interesting to see what the world looks like in a year, because things are fucking falling apart. We're 1 month into Corona. This could be 4 to 6 months. I've heard it could be 2 years. That's the longest I've heard. We've yet to see the hundreds of thousands of people die. There's now 10 million people applying for unemployment. This is the highest it's ever been. Higher than the Depression. And this bailout, like, people are mad that they're giving money to the fucking corporations. They need to stay afloat so there's jobs to go back to. But fair enough, right now we need to keep the people alive. But a lot of stuff isn't going to survive. Disney might not survive. Disney fucking was making like, I want to say $57 million a week with their parks. The parks are closed. $57 million a week. When you count on that in your budget and you're closed for months, for 8 to 12 to 30 of those weeks, that's a lot of money. That's in the billion. There's a lot of money that you can't afford to lose when you're a corporation as large as Disney. And they just spent billions of dollars on getting the Star Wars franchise, and all of the Star Wars shit is bombing and tanking because nobody gives a fuck about Star Wars anymore. And then they just launched Disney Plus, and they're trying to knock everybody else out of the streaming game, so they give you a year of free streaming. Well, it's nothing but black books. They can't release their movies because you can't go to the movies. So now Onward, instead of getting a ticket box office, it's just straight to Disney Plus. Movie made me cry, by the way. Shout out to Big Donnie D. It was a tearjerker. Not my favorite Pixar movie, but it definitely had me all teary-eyed at the end. I'm a sucker for those teary-eyed moments. Pixar gets me every time. So the comic book industry might be finished forever. And this is wonderful news. This is a good thing. DC and Marvel, they don't print their own comic books. They gather the resources, they send it to a third-party company called Diamond, and Diamond prints the physical comic books that you go buy in a comic book store. Diamond has said they're not printing any more shit until further notice. This is not like until the coronavirus is over. They're like, hey, we're bankrupt and it's over. Their checks are bouncing. It's done. They're going to have to find a new company to publish all of the comic books. And in the meantime, the comic book stores, the brick and mortar places that sell these, they're all going bankrupt as well. All these man children are fucked. Now, this is a wonderful thing. And this is where I'm going to start spiraling out in several different directions at once. And all of this is going to come back around and make sense. Hopefully. On YouTube, you have a lot of people that are reacting to the changes that are happening in comic books. And the changes are everything's getting up to date with the culture. So now Iron Man is a black teenage girl. And Batman is an Asian boy. And Alfred is a gay dude. And characters have names like... well, they had some new ridiculous ones. Safe Space. There's a superhero called Safe Space. There's a superhero called... The superhero was created by being injected by internet gas. It's if you follow this shit on YouTube, it's fucking ridiculous. It's the level of parody. Now, all the grown man children are getting mad at the writers of these comic books, these SJWs that have taken over the industry. And they're mad at the wrong people. I mean, you can be mad at their work and say that you don't like it, but You should be mad at the corporation. You should be mad at Marvel and DC because the SJWs aren't walking into their offices and putting a gun to their head and going, hey, you gonna make Iron Man a black woman or I'm gonna blow your fucking brains out. That ain't how it's going down. Marvel and DC are going out and hiring these authors to make books that they think are going to sell, and they're out to make money. Now, here's part of a massive disconnect that all of these people have. They read comic books and they aspire to the ideals of their superheroes. You know, they have great power comes great responsibility. We're out for justice, not vengeance. All the tropes, freedom, the American way, they believe in the ideals that these characters represent. But the corporations don't believe in those ideals. The corporations are evil corporations, the same as any other corporation. And I've talked in the past about how they fucked over Alan Moore. Alan Moore made Watchmen, and he said, I don't want anything else made out of this. Just let it be a great piece of art. And they said no. And they made it into movies. They made it into a shitty TV show. And then just to really pour salt on the wounds and really just tell him he ain't shit to this industry, Alan Moore, the legend that everybody looks up to, they put out a new comic book series that was like 58 spin-offs of his comic book, and they hired every writer and artist in the industry to work on this. And all of these writers say that they love and worship Alan Moore, and every one of them, if they had any integrity to him, would have turned down the gig, but they didn't. They took the gig and they fucking shit all over his wishes as an artist so that they could get a little bit further in their careers. The guy that made Batman died broke and penniless. The guy that made the Joker died broke and penniless. The guys that made Superman died broke and penniless. They got fucked over by the corporations, and their intellectual property, their IP, got taken away from them. And now you're going to these corporations that fucked over the creators of the characters that you love, and you're saying, you don't treat my characters the right way. Well, they don't treat the creators the right way. Why the fuck would they treat the characters the right way? The characters are just something to be pimped. It's intellectual pimping. Intellectual pimpitude. It's pimping, pimping. So, now the comic industry is fucked. And it was already bad, but now it's going out of business. For real, for real. And this is wonderful, because the technology has gotten to a point where you can self-publish. And so now comic books aren't going to be written by the people that are chasing a quick career, and they're not going to be written and drawn by people that were hired by the corporation just to like squeeze another dollar out of everything. It's going to be the people that are passionate about the project that they're creating. And it's going to be up to you, the comic book nerd children, to find these new passionate people and be impressed by the people that are putting in the real work. Now, you no longer have the option to be spoon-fed. But if you love this shit, then you can start finding the people that are actually passionate about the thing that you claim to love. We gotta take a break so I can change my kid's butt. He got a stinky doo-doo. Now, I get a lot of hate on YouTube and Reddit, and I deal with the same shit that Red Bar deals with on a lower level. Where people are constantly telling me I'm not funny, we're hacks, we're jealous, we have no content, blah, 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 blah. All these cudgels that they cling to, these excuses. And I want to explain where I kind of think that that comes from. I used to work at a homeless shelter. And one day, you know, when I was I was in my 20s and I was still in college. So I'm very liberal and I'm very starry-eyed. And I just thought, like, oh, we just got to love the wounds out of these people. You know, we're going to get them dry. We'll get them into drug programs. We'll get them connected to some kind of higher power. We'll get them some skills training so they can get better jobs. And then they can be happy. They can live a normal life. Like, you don't have to be strung out. It's not that hard to have a baseline of a decent life. And I was trying to get, like, programs initiated and stuff. I was a volunteer coordinator. Had way too much responsibility for a kid as young and stupid as I was. And so one day, one of the manager guys, one of the head guys, sits me down. And he's like, Ian, what would you do if you had a flat tire? And I was like, I'd change the tire. He goes, all right, what if you don't have a spare tire? I'd call AAA. All right, what if you don't have AAA? I'd call a family or a friend. Okay, what if you didn't have your phone on you? I'd put my hazards on, I'd walk to a gas station, or I'd flag down a cop. He goes, all right, so if you got a flat tire, you have about 6 different options that you could think of off the top of your head to deal with that crisis or situation. He's like, you need to understand the reason a lot of these guys are here, the reason they're homeless, the reason they're drug addicts, they're strung out, is that their heads only have 1 to 2 options, and they use those options to deal with every problem that they have. So, like, my dad was a yelly, mean guy, and for a long time, it was programmed into me to respond to everything with anger. I didn't just have to learn how to not be angry, I had to learn how to let shit go so that the impetus to be angry wasn't there in the first place. Otherwise, it's like you're just pushing that shit down and waiting to explode. That's the part Bill Burr is still waiting to figure out, is he doesn't know how to let shit go yet. So these homeless people, they were raised very poorly. And it's very easy to raise kids poorly. You know, I work and I do comedy and I got my wife and I got these streaming shows. I have very little free time. A lot of days I don't sleep, but I try to be a good parent and always get on the floor and hang out with my kid and go to for walks and go to exploring centers, to the Discovery Zone, to the Fun Zone, to the Ball Factory. We go ride bicycles. We walk to the gas station and buy donuts. So whatever I can do to be engaging in his life. We play games, and games that I don't know the rules to, that I somehow lose every time. But we do these things because I want him to be a happy, healthy, well-developed person with a mind that functions, that is creative, that is able to create different options if he faces a crisis. And a lot of people in this world were ignored as kids and then didn't have or didn't take advantage of access to things like books. A lot of people don't read and have never read. Like, there's people that stopped reading after high school or college, and then there's people that just never learned how to read in the first place. Then there's people that don't have the internet, or people that have the internet but don't have smartphones, or people that have smartphones but they don't know what a podcast is, or they don't know how to research or piss around YouTube to find new information. There's people that aren't interested in new information. They have well enough. They have, this is my job, this is my family, this is my food, this is my routine, and they bounce around that and they just fill their days with gossip and drama, and their point of view never goes past that. They never learn any new options, they never learn any new information. They're almost a different species at this point. That's what technology is doing to us, is it's creating a difference between people that are plugged in and people that aren't plugged in. And people that aren't plugged in at all, those are the NPCs. They're the non-playable characters. And then even amongst the people that are plugged in, you know, there's levels to that as well. So a lot of people that are commenting all of this shit on my thing that are saying the same thing over and over again, that's you're jealous, you're not funny, you're sad on the inside, apparently you're hurting, apparently you're jealous. All of that is wrong. All of that is, those are the only options they have to reach to when they experience a slight amount of discomfort. They don't agree with what I say, and they want to hurt me, because their way of dealing with stuff that makes them uncomfortable is to hurt. They want me to feel the same pain that they feel. They somehow feel hurt or insecure because my opinion doesn't line up with their opinion. And rather than engage with me about the ideas or argue with me, they just want to make me feel hurt. Said that like a caveman. But they don't even have a lot of options to hurt people. So they just regurgitate the same stupid horseshit that everybody else regurgitates. And that's what most of what Rex calls infotainment, that's what most of the internet is people regurgitating. All the Revenge of the Sisses and the Philip DeFrancos of the world, they just look at what's trending on Twitter and YouTube, and then they regurgitate that. And the comics are finding the exact same talking points and the exact same, like, this is what the media says is the naughty words and the naughty topics. And then they're giving you their regurgitated version of the same thing that everybody else is talking about. None of them are being pioneers. None of them are willing to be uncomfortable. Back as podcasts were first starting, one of the conversations they would have a lot was how much they hated road comics. And the idea was that, like, road comics were hacky, whereas these other guys, they were the ones breaking new ground. But as I look back on it, I wonder if it isn't that, like, road comics, they had their own thing. So they weren't trying to be part of the industry, so they didn't give a fuck about all the politics that comes along with trying to have a Hollywood career. And I wonder if they weren't just trying to shut them down so that people didn't go like, oh man, those guys are free. That's what funny looks like. Because they didn't want to be held to that standard. And I want people to be held to the standard of funny. The baseline is funny. I don't care about the intellectual risk you're taking or the emotional risk that you're taking. If you're not funny, you're not doing the job. And I'd like to extend that further to say, can you guys try and be funny all the time? Can you try and be entertaining just a little bit when you have your goddamn podcast? None of your podcasts are funny. None of the interview shows are funny. None of the sitting down and talking about comedy is funny. And on top of talking, not only are you talking about comedy, but you're not really talking about comedy. You guys know better. You know who is shit and you're not talking about it. And you're being bitch made. And that is fucking infuriating to a guy like me. Because I get kicked and I'm at the bottom. I'm at the bottom and people are like trying to stop me actively. So to see people at the top, the people that I'm supposed to be looking up to, not be willing to take a risk and not take discount. I gotta fight the fight. I don't have $70 million in the bank. I don't even qualify for the comic relief aid. I don't qualify as a comic. So I should not be more gangster than you guys. I should not be as gangster as you guys. But to the Louis J. Gomez's of the world, like, he's completely bitch made to a man like me. You're never going to see Louis J. Gomez say word one about a comic not being shit. He ain't going to come out and tell you the truth about Louis' special being hacky and garbage. Not garbage. I'm being mean. I'm being facetious. But, yeah, man. And he's the real ass, dude. These, Joe Rogan and Tom Segura, these are the kings of comedy. These are the people that are doing it. This is the next Richard Pryor. When Richard Pryor, Bill Hicks, Tom Segura. That does, one of these things is not like the other one. There's a clip I'm going to put on the end of this. It's a rare interview with Patrice. And what I loved about Patrice is that he was always trying to be funny. I saw a great clip of him the other day where he had a translator for the deaf on stage with him. And somebody was typing up notes that went up on screen behind him. Like, he was at like a comedy show for deaf people. And he's the worst person you could possibly have for that, because he uses his intonation, he uses slang words, he's making words up. So to translate all of that through deafness, I don't know how it works. On top of all of that, he didn't do material, he decided to fuck with the people that were doing the translating. And it was amazing. He was fucking with three different people at the same time and playing them off of each other. And you don't see that level of funny, of being good at funny, of being spontaneous in any of the comics that are alive today. You don't see any of them being playful, being a cartoon character. I've really gotten into the idea that me and CEO are Bugs and Daffy. And I was watching a thing about Bugs Bunny. Watch some old Bugs Bunny cartoons. There's one about a lion. Look up Bugs Bunny and the Lion. Bugs Bunny was sadistic. I was watching one of these like documentaries about Looney Tunes, and they're like, in one of the first cartoons, Elmer Fudd walks up and he sticks his gun in Bugs Bunny's rabbit hole, and he wants to blow his fucking head off. And Bugs Bunny appears behind him and he looks into the rabbit hole with him, takes a bite of his carrot, and is like, "Eh, what's up, Doc?" That is perfect. A perfect representation of zen and funny and being ego-free and being fear-free. Rather than worrying about the person that's putting a gun to your head, he stands next to them and engages them in funny. That's what I want from people. I want to see the passion. I want to see everything burn down, just like the comic book industry, because I want to see the people that are passionate about funny rise up out of the ashes and take this shit to another level. I care about the medium. I like funny. I want there to be more funny. I want there to be better shit. I want to be into stuff other than me and Red Bar. And with apologies. I need more options. But the bar has just sunken down so low. Everybody got bitched up by podcast. In the same way that, like, within a local comedy scene, everybody starts talking to everybody, and then it becomes this thing of, like, you don't want to piss off the mean girls, and you don't want to piss off the, you know, the clique of cool guys. And, like, when I got in trouble, there were people that were saying to me, Ian, like, I'm scared to say stuff on stage now, because I don't want to get in trouble. And it's like, at the open mic level, you don't want to get in trouble? You're going to let these motherfuckers that are never going to have a career decide what you do and don't say on stage. Your point of view, you don't believe in it enough to face these guys down. That's what my whole thing. I had a podcast, the last one that had stand-up on it. It was all about cowardice. My buddy listened to it and he's like, I like listening to you talk about comedy. And I like the Buddha stuff you put on there, but I wish you would explain the Buddha stuff. And I don't like over-explaining all of this stuff. I just let it be a little bit weird. I know it's not for everyone. But for the people that it is for, they understand what I'm saying. That episode, the entire thing was a meditation on courage and cowardice. It's looking at when was Marc Maron courageous and how did he get bitched up. And then I complained about him being too on his soapbox and preachy. But then my entire set was preachy. My set wasn't meant to be preachy. Everything I said was funny to me, but the audience just wasn't rocking with it. But given a better audience, that material wouldn't have been as preachy as it came off. People got uncomfortable, which means I didn't do my job the right way. I should have shucked and jived a little bit more, but it just didn't come to me at the time. And then the Buddha stuff is again about, like, you have to have the courage to have an unpopular opinion, to do the right thing just because it's right, even if everybody hates you for being right. That's what I want out of my comedians. That's the level of fearlessness and brazenness that I want out of everyone. Are you willing to die for this shit? Because if you're not, get the fuck out of my way, because I am. There was a comment I saw on Facebook the other day that was like, who do you think is the most underrated comedian? I think it's Dave Attell. Dave Attell. Dave Attell, comedy legend, is the most underrated comedian of all time. The dude that everybody fucking bows down to, the dude that's had like 3 TV shows, is underrated. I'm underrated. I'm the underrated comic, not Dave motherfucking Attell. That's the stuff that I wanted to like jump through the internet and strangle people. But I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to get people to make that turnover I need people to stop looking at me as an open micer. And I need them to start taking seriously the body of work that I'm creating. To be like, Philip Wave, I made my own animated series. 11 mixtapes with apologies. Look at this body of work and tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. And tell me I don't know what I'm doing. This is how it should be done. This style. Style, damn it. Alright, I'm sure I had some other stuff to talk to. I hope all of this kind of came together. People weren't raised right, and they have limited options to deal with stuff, and that's why they're spazzing out on the internet. And it's important for comics to teach comedy literacy, because otherwise it's going to be left to people that don't know what they're talking about. I hope you guys that listen to my show know more about funny than people that listen to any other show. Not just because I want you to appreciate the shit that I'm doing, but I like anything you see, I want you to have the discernment to say, like, that's really cool, or, well, yeah, that's trash. That's just some garbage that's being forced down my throat. One other thing that Louis did that I liked was he had his jokes about retarded people, and I hate that he tried to make a point out of it. He was like, when we used to say the word retards, it felt like they were more a part of our lives. That's the point you were making? That's your safety net you threw out there that we should call people retarded more because they'll be a bigger part of our life? Shut the fuck up. Why would you even try and throw a safety net out there? Be uncomfortable. Be comfortable with being uncomfortable. But what I like is he ended the joke with, like, he's talking to a retarded person and he's saying, there's no cure and we're not even working on it. And then he just walked away and left it there. He left it at awkward. I like that. That's what all of his jokes should be. All of them should go right up to that line and then walk away and let them figure it out for themselves. You're not here to give them the answers. You're here to keep pointing at the thing that's wrong and the thing that's funny until the illusions dissolve and the truth appears. but it's not your job to give them the Jordan Peterson truth. Here's your gospel version. Just point at it. Just nudge them forward. We're dealing with people that weren't raised right. People that can't read. Let me tell you about one of my fans. We're going to close out with this. We used to have a show called With Apologies. Now we call it Without Apologies, but really it's With Apologies. And the show was hosted by my friend Nick. And Nick had a mental breakdown. He started listening to Gavin McGinnis. He became a proud boy. He stopped jerking off. And his entire life went to shit. And me and CEO teased him. And that didn't help. So he quit the show. And for 2 years, there was no With Apologies. In that time, this guy, Sean Boyce, discovered our reruns on YouTube and became a super fan. And he started commenting on all of the videos. And he found our fan page and started begging us to bring the show back and asking us questions about specific episodes. And his way of writing, it's so poor. It's not even like a schizophrenic person writing. It's like two different people typing on the same keyboard at the same time. Like, words break off, sentences break off, things repeat, everything's misspelled. It looks like, as much as you can make the typed word look like schizophrenic chaos, that's what his comments look like. So he kept asking us to bring the show back around the same time that me and CO were out trolling, and we ran into Unbleached. And Unbleached was a lot like Nick, and we kind of had a running gag between us, like, wouldn't it be funny if we brought the show back and called him Nick? And I was like, let's do this for Sean Boyce. Let's see if we can trick him into thinking that Unbleached is Nick. This is an absurd, stupid thing to do. We're playing with people's lives for the sole purpose of amusing me and CEO. But that's what we did. We brought the show back with Unbleached, mostly for Sean Boyce. And because we wanted to tease Nick and tell him that we'd replaced him with new Nick. And thank God we did, because even though things didn't work out with Unbleached, that led to us meeting Ross Dog and the show coming back in the way that it is now. And I feel like we're just now, we're at like 90-some episodes, I feel like we're starting to figure out what it is the show is and how it functions and what it is we do. My kid's climbing on top of me. So Sean Boyce, we brought the show back, and he went to call into the show one day. Now, Sean doesn't have a phone. So what he did is he called in from his Xbox, and it came in all gargled, and he was saying something about, like, it sounded like he said he murdered his girlfriend or he's gonna murder her. And so we're trying to talk to him, but it's so gargled that we can't understand what he's saying. So we started teasing him, because that's what we do. He's a super fan. He should know that, right? Well, he got super butthurt and said that we're all dead to him, and we're all unfunny hacks, and we should all screw off and die in a fire, die screaming. And he rebuked us and started leaving nasty comments on all of our videos. And we were like, all right, well, sorry, Sean. Come back. Better luck next time. That was like a year ago. And now, a couple days ago, Sean Boyce resurfaced. And apparently he's been watching us this whole time but not commenting. And he's still a super fan. So he reached out to me and Ross Dog, each individually on Facebook, and he was asking us to do him a favor. Ross Dog was smart enough to just say no from the beginning. But because Sean is our super fan, because he's part of our mythos, I indulged him. I know he's a crazy person, but I was like, what do you need? I'll do whatever I can to help you. What happened is he has a YouTube account and he's trying to do some streaming, but he can't stream for longer than 15 minutes without verifying his account. Now, to verify your account, you need a phone. They text you a thing, verify you're a person, you type in the PIN number or whatever. Bada bing, bada boom. Now he's unlocked the next level of YouTube and he can fucking stream endlessly for hours. Apparently he doesn't have a phone or an iPad. And he doesn't know how to figure this out with a computer. So he asked me to do it and he sent me his email and his password. And he wanted me to log into his account, put my phone number in, and then put the PIN in to unlock his account for him. This is a big ask. This is a big goddamn favor. There are people that want to destroy me. I don't want to fucking get my phone number out there. What if this is a scam to hack me, and then people get into my emails and they find, like, old take-me-back breakup letters that are super cringy and embarrassing, or nude photos, or all this horrible shit that's buried in the archives of my emails somewhere. I decide, you know what, Sean? You're too stupid to be trying to fuck me over. I'm going to do it. I'm going to take a shot and I'm going to help him out. So I log into his email and I put in my real phone number and it sends me an error message. Now, Sean is in a different continent. I'm pretty sure he's out in, I think he's in Norway or Sweden or some shit. And so Google gives me a an error message. I'm sorry, buddy. I'm almost done. No. Just let me finish telling this story. YouTube doesn't let me do it. So I message Sean. I'm like, hey, man, I tried. It doesn't work. And he's like, well, try this, this, and this. And it was just more variations of the same thing. Similar to what I was saying about drug addicts and commenters. He only has one or two options in his head, and he's just going to keep trying those same options again and again, even if they're not working. So I'm like, listen, man, this is like, this is 40 or 50 messages right after I wake up from the same guy, and I've done him an insane favor. And I'm like, listen, man, I can't do anymore. This is getting annoying. Like, you're starting to get bothersome. He reads that, flips out, says that I'm a piece of shit, I'm not funny, he's done with me. He blocked me on Messenger, blocked me on Facebook, and he's back to fucking hating me. I put my life on the line and my real phone number on the goddamn line to try and be helpful to this dude who's supposed to be a super fan, and he fucking flipped on me. These are the people that are watching these shows. I wish there was a better way to, with these audiences, it's like you don't know who's listening. I really like the With Apologies universe because we have cool black guys from the Cult of Black Phillip, and then we have true crime, middle-aged owls, old white ladies, and then we have special needs people like Wendy and Kenny and Sean Boyce, and then we have Sans gossip people, and then we have old ONA people, and somehow we've gotten all of these people more or less cajoled into being a hive mind. Not that we all think alike, but everybody kind of is on the same page about what it is we're doing. And just like a toddler, I think with your audience, you need to take the time to explain things to them and to give them boundaries. Otherwise, they're just going to stare up at you lovingly and then turn on you the second you don't please them. I'm sorry if that whole thing, that whole thought didn't come together. My kid's jumping all on top of me. Alright guys, quarantine's still going on. God only knows if or when we'll ever be back to do more stand-up. But meantime, in between time, I hope you guys are having fun. Fuck Sacha Baron Cohen. Fuck Louis J. Gomez, you bitch made. Louis, if you have any balls, call in with apologies. You're not better than us. 14 years and you put out that trash album. 14 years you've been doing this and you crying about Big J giving you notes. You need to get notes. It's the only way you're going to get better, you bitch. You want to be a real ass dude? Call into With Apologies. Losing my voice and everything. On that note, guys, stay tuned to With Apologies. It's the most fun you can have. I can't believe it works. I can't believe all these people are just go with it. I could just create a reality. It can just be a courtroom drama and everybody behaves appropriately. It's amazing and it's funny and it's starting to come together. So stay tuned with apologies. My name's Ian Ellis. Deuces.
Comedian Patrice O'Neill is at the Cleveland Improv this weekend. Showtime's tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. Joins us in here. What's up, man?
Buckle up.
Buckle up, baby. Buckle up. I always refer to you.
We're already going at it in the break.
We were. I always refer to you because I listen to you on ONA.
Okay.
And it's got to be a tough transition to make to do satellite and then do, like, a regular show where you can't speak as freely, language-wise, not topic-wise.
Especially the areas you go to.
Yeah. Well, yeah, language, because, you know, look, you know, I enjoy vocabulary words, but a good swear helps, you know, season. I enjoy a good curse word because it just makes you, the exclamation points, it's just, you know.
It's the way people talk.
If I say F, it just means something. You know. If I'm on the radio and I go, you know, I disagree with you, sir, and I find what you're saying to be egregious, it don't give you the same feeling as...
No, it sounds like me.
F.
I know, it's a word nerd over there.
Yeah, right. F you. But I'm a big... Look, when I grew up, man, being a word nerd, you know, you was insulted as you were, you know, trying to be white guy or whatever. But I'm a word nerd now. I love words, but I still do love to swear.
Yeah.
And the only thing, you know, the difference is, look, topic-wise, you can. It's easy not to swear, but there's some things you cannot say because the people at the top are like... My only complaint about this whole world is that the people at the top are just unfunny,
yeah,
non-smart people who are in charge of artists.
Who have too much to lose.
You know, and they're like, well, you shouldn't say that because of what?
Right.
You're not a man of the people, stupid. I don't want to. What am I talking to you?
Yeah.
About what should be said? Away with you. But you can't get paid.
Right.
You know, and so it's a, you know the game. It is what it is.
You got to try to keep some people happy.
I try to be fun. I mean, it's hard. You know, you got to pay your bills with this, but if I hit the lottery, man, I'd have a lot more fun.
Right.
I'd start my own radio station and figure out, you know, launch a satellite,
yeah,
write a good 300 mil in the bank, launch a satellite, start a radio station, whatever, say what you want, say what you feel, my friends.
God, I heard you talking one time about, and it was dark, man. I mean, I know some of that stuff gets dark.
Hello, yeah.
And it was the best. It was just so raw, man. You were talking about how your mom said, you know, maybe you should, you want to be a comic. And your mom was, like, giving you advice or something. You're you're giving me advice for?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a lonely game.
Yeah.
I made my choice. I love my mother. But, you know, moms comes in, you know, they come in with their, she doesn't have a passport.
Right.
And she's telling me, but, you know, we're getting along better because that used to be a little block in our relationship where she would go, you know, maybe you should do this and do this and do this. And I go, Mom, you don't know what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah.
What are you talking about? What I should do? What do you think I'm doing?
Yeah.
Sleeping?
I'm doing what I do.
Get on a plane to Cleveland next week. What are you talking about? You never been out the country.
Right.
Stop giving me advice.
Yeah.
But you love your mom. So
she
let
wants
her
to
have
be
it.
Happy.
She wants to be mom.
Yes.
And
that's what they do.
But what mothers do. I realized because I grew up without a father, and I never thought that was a big deal until recently. I was where you go, what a father's for.
Yeah.
You know, a mother, when you fall, they're there. They tell you, stay on the ground. Let me fix what's messed up, and then we'll get you up. But I don't want you moving until you.
Right.
But I think a father, an older man who has like loves you, goes, okay, get up right now. Keep moving. We'll find out what's wrong with you, but you have to keep moving.
Yeah, right.
Moving is the only way you're going to win as a man. So I had a situation where I was like, I realized I didn't have a father, and it like choked me up. I go, wow, it hit me at the age of 40 what a father is. It's just an older guy when you run out of your own vague interpretation of what you think a man is, that you're trying to be on your own, and you go, man, I'm just... I don't have any more made-up man thoughts
right,
here.
Yeah.
I need a better man than me to help me say, okay, I reached a point where I can't make it up myself.
Yeah.
And then I realized I didn't have one of those. I mean, I have friends who are my age. I go, what are you doing? And they give you advice. Oh, this is what you do. This is what I did. And you go, really? You suck.
And then and look where you are.
And then my mother, God bless her, she sent me, you know, they love you. They just love you. Mothers love you where it's not the love you need sometimes as a man, like meaning you need man love sometimes. You need like
tough love.
Tough.
Yeah, right.
And my mother's tough, but she's a woman. She's not even like, she sent me something, you know, God takes things out of your hands so it's empty.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You can hold better things. Thanks, Ma.
Yeah.
What's your advice? I don't want no more God advice. Give me something to just give me something.
What happened to your dad? You know?
I didn't think. Look.
To a mom, you're always like 10 years old.
Yeah.
For the rest of your life.
I felt a long time that's. Can I say sperm?
You can say sperm.
I felt for a long time.
I'm carrying some.
That sperm is of. It's very easy for a man not to be in his children's life. Any man who's there for his family and there for his children is a really special guy, and he loves that woman, and he loves his family, because where my sperm goes means nothing if I don't care about you. So there's guys that have sex with women and they get them pregnant. And they don't care about them. It's the same thing as sitting at the computer.
Yeah, right.
Right, right, right,
yeah.
Right.
So my mother happened to be somebody that my father didn't care about, so it was easy for him to leave. But it never tripped me out, because I just was growing up. You know,
I never thought
about needing a father. So recently, where I go, oh, that's what a father's for.
Right, right, right.
Other than that, dude, I was having fun up until then.
Yeah.
And then I go, that's what a father's for. You're an older guy who actually cares about you and your existence. But if he don't, it's we don't have that in that maternal love, which is like, I love you from conception.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because she carried you and all that.
Guys don't love you until you're something.
Yeah.
Until you're two. And you're like, oh, okay, I see where you could be somebody.
Would you like
to... We're not sure until you're about three or four,
right,
guys.
Yeah, you know. That's why, like, when they talk to guys about, like, when women... Oh, we're pregnant. Married couples is like, no, honey, you're pregnant. Like, I'm telling you what, I have two kids and we're divorced. My kids live in Michigan, but it's like, I didn't feel anything until my kids came out.
Exactly.
And even then, I'm kind of like, okay.
Look at this wet thing.
Yeah.
What is this?
Now I got to get to know you when she's had 9 months with you. You know what I mean? Like,
And you put your hand on the stomach to pretend.
Yeah, I feel it too. I feel a kick. I'm like, I don't care. That's creeping me out, frankly. You know, I'm like, I don't have any relation to that whatsoever. You know, I just made a deposit, and I'll see you in a year.
Yeah. But I'm not victimized. I'm not tripping out because, you know, life is life. But it's very easy. Look, I want to start the dude network, man, because I'm really getting tired of explaining dudes. And I'm like, where dudes are getting crucified.
Right.
For dude stuff.
Especially when it's not that complex. Have to explain really stuff. We had a girl the other day, I was talking about divorce or something. This girl emails and goes, what did you do that you got divorced? I go, what did I do? Like, why is it always the dude? It's always the assumption.
First of all, what did I do by getting married? Do you understand this?
Yeah.
It's against every... Marriage is for you? Do you think I wanted to ruin my life? It's nothing but a stripe. It's for you. It's nothing but a... But if you work at my company, if I'm a company, you've been working with me for 5 years, it's a raise.
Yeah. It's a raise. That's right.
It was a raise.
And it was created when we were all, like, the life expectancy was like 30 years old. You know? Marriage wasn't created for people to live to 90.
Oh!
Live to, like, die at 29. Baby, I love you. I'm off to the great reward or whatever. You know? 90? These people are like, oh, look at them. They've been married 55 years. Are you insane?
Yeah, and I'm not...
55.
And this conversation we're having, I'm not saying all guys are supposed to feel it. I'm just saying there should be a dude option for when one of these guys get caught out there cheating, that there's a dude network that goes, did you see his wife? This guy is famous. And did you see her? There's a reason, and I'm talking to the limo guy, there's a reason they don't have Dos Equis beer woman.
Right.
The most interesting 80-year-old woman
in the world.
In the world.
Right.
Who just has young men around going, hey, guys! I catch owls! And I climb mountains! It doesn't exist.
Right.
So if you're a 60-year-old man who... We're built on game. Like, I'm not George Clooney, but I have a beautiful girl because girls are better like that, where I can give her something else other than just physical that makes her love me.
Yeah.
It's not my fault that she couldn't do the same with me.
Right.
Like, there's no way I'm marrying a fat, funny girl.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, they're far more accepting than we are. Yeah.
It ain't happening. Now, you look over, right? There's a couple of women in there, and it just hits. Any women listening, men having dudes having dude talk. It's a scummy thing.
Yeah.
What we are is scummy.
But if you walk into a room full of women, it's not far off. A bunch of girls sitting around. It's different. It's not the same thing. What I'm saying is that there's this notion that, like, to your point, the way guys are treated when they talk like that is just disgusting. And there's like this fake sense of something.
But there will never be that time. Look, you go in a room full of women, and this is just...
Right.
And they go, what would you do if your man cheated on you, if you caught him in bed? I would pour hot bleach on his face and tase his mother.
Yeah.
And then if you get some dudes don't even think in that. And then like, the other girls will go, woo!
There's songs about taking a baseball bat to his car.
Yeah, that's right, baby. And, and drink, just drink to that. We'll, but if you get a guy that goes, look, what would you do with your girl? I would poke both eyes out with with a piece of, you know,
stick,
a knit needle. your friends would go, what? You would poke her eyes out?
What's wrong with you? There's other women.
Yeah, just go to the club. What are you poking her eyes out? What are you,
there
stupid?
Are other women.
You're disgusting.
Right.
Like, but that's what we. That's because dude stuff. And there's a play out in New York. The menopause monologue.
The vagina monologue.
But it's the menopause.
Oh,
one.
It's called.
It's now it's the like
midlife.
Really? Like it don't work no more. And now it's I get to know how you feel.
Right.
But if dudes, this is how I feel. I'm 60. My wife's 60. Ugh. I want a young broad.
Yeah.
Because women will date you if you're rich and old.
Yeah.
So I get to have that little... But if we talk like that and we talk frank, it's we're horrible human beings. But I'm tired of being a horrible human being for the fact that I feel certain ways, the fact that I listen to Mel Gibson and go, what did she do?
That's what we said, too. We were like... Because there's that initial thing, the very first clip that anybody heard of Mel Gibson, you go, oh, my God, this guy's insane. But once you take a step back, you go, this is amazing.
No,
and what did she do? I mean, the guy's crazy. Obviously, he's out of his mind.
Well,
have you ever had one of those conversations with a girl? Like, have you ever been to that level, that place?
No, I'm because you know you. That's when you lose. And I tell you where he's at. Where he was at really was he was a guy who was on top.
Yeah.
And she, you know, like UFC, he had her in his guard, and then she flipped. And got him in her guard, and she's grounding and pounding him.
Yeah.
And she got to his core. But a buddy of mine said, if you listen to the tapes, Robert Kelly, he hit me to this. It was interesting. He said, if you listen to this tape, she's always responding to something that he's saying. It's not a conversation. It's not an argument.
It's one way.
It's a one-way thing where she goes, you need medicine. And he goes, what? Then he goes, you need a baseball bat to your head. But it's not directly... it's not directly involved with what she's saying at the moment.
Yeah.
Which he's like, it could be one of those tapes.
He was doing like a one-man show.
It was weird.
You make me want to smoke.
Yeah.
He was mad.
Mm-hmm.
But where's the Oksana tapes when she tells him, I don't feed your kid. You know, like, I don't like your kid. So I don't feed him when you're not around.
Right.
Like, just whatever she's saying to him to get him that riled up, and she's getting riled up also. You know what I mean? But this thing here, but look, right or wrong, dudes, there should be a counter response to the male hatred. It should be the counter male hatred, which is just somebody who goes, let me look at it Mel's way and put Mel's point of view out there a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and that's what's
just a little bit.
That's what's coming now, because now that all of his stuff is out there, and it's not going to get any worse for him.
No.
Is now they're going to dig into every possible nook and cranny of this chick's life. They're going to find tapes, they're going to find emails, they're going to find texts.
Well, it's blackmail. It is what it is, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you just need that. You need dudes to go, look, not saying it's right.
Right.
But look at Dave Letterman's wife.
Yeah.
You gotta get some stuff.
He dated her for 19 years.
Yes.
Happened to knock her up.
You gotta get a little side.
Yeah. It's a biological imperative, you know? It's in the brain.
And if he doesn't, he's a really good man.
Yeah.
And you should not look past that. This should be a holiday each year where we celebrate men not...
Being men.
Yeah, I mean, when you go, oh man, you have been faithful to me all year, baby. Here is
all year. Yeah.
Here's a girl.
Right. What do you want for your anniversary, honey? I'll tell you what I want for my anniversary.
How old are you?
Your sister.
I'm 65. Really? My wife's 65. I want a 25-year-old for my birthday. And she goes, you will get it.
Right.
Because you fight hard and you deserve this.
Uh-huh. Jumping out of the cake and the whole deal.
I'm curious, what's your girl say about this?
We talk, man. She lives with me. So it's like we... And we on the verge of getting married and the whole thing, but I always just
so you're getting married?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She deserves it, dude. I mean, if this is a scam, then she even deserves it if it's a scam.
She's putting up a good front if it's a scam.
I put her through the ringer.
Yeah.
And she is a soldier. I'm telling you. You know,
a woman like that deserves a lifetime of Patrice.
She deserves
little Patrice.
She deserves if she wants it. She deserves it.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is that my whole basis is I just don't want her to take for granted that I'm her man, that I'm in her life, and my instinct is to want to hit on every woman and have any woman in my house. And that I meet. I can meet a chick and go, hey, come on over for dinner tomorrow. Right. And the fact that I don't do that, it's just, I want some credit. I do.
Yeah.
Because that's not us. Quality is not us. Quantity is us.
Yeah.
Because we build quality later. We don't care if you can read or write or, you know, it's like, you know, how many kids you have? I got 10. We work.
It's a lot of groceries.